Chapter 11. Where should the transition begin? We've talked about what a new system needs to look like and how a political movement will be needed to make it happen. And we've discussed some of the hurdles which will need to be overcome. A further question relates to where the transition can begin and where people can be found to dedicate themselves to it. As before, we've looked for examples around the world to offer inspiration. When it comes to implementing the social changes needed to address the climate problem, some countries stand out more than others. In Germany, Austria, Scandinavia, and the Pacific Island nations most affected by rising temperatures and rising sea levels, understanding about the scale of the change needed is generally good. The majority of people in these countries see what needs to happen, and many are willing to act collectively in society's long-term interests. In several other countries, there are often very large pockets of understanding, but there's also very strong opposition from finance, industry, and climate deniers. That makes it harder to build the political consensus needed for change, though it may be possible in some particular cities, regions, or states. Here, we're referring specifically to the United States, Canada, the UK, and Australia. There are also countries where there are small pockets of understanding, such as France, Spain, and Italy. And there is China, where there's a very good level of understanding in the government about the threat of climate change, but a poor level of understanding among the people. China is the world's worst polluter by far, and yet it has paradoxically also claimed that it wants to build an ecological civilization. This is at odds with their development model over the last 30 years, which has been almost entirely based on rapid economic growth, very high industrial output, and massive resource extraction, with terrible environmental consequences. Since the onset of COVID-19, the country has also shifted away from renewables and back into coal to produce energy, making the climate problem even worse. In some ways, this is puzzling because the Chinese government knows that hundreds of millions of its people will be very badly affected by climate change, and that cities like Shanghai, Shenzhen, and other parts of the Pearl River Delta will become uninhabitable before 2050 because of rising sea levels. There are also countries where there is outright hostility to any discussion of climate change and fierce opposition to any response. These are mostly countries that are highly dependent on the fossil fuel industry in the Middle East, Russia, Central Asia, and the Caucasus. This is, of course, understandable. Without fossil energy, many of these countries would be very much poorer than today. So they'll need very careful support during the transition so that the people there are not made worse off. There are also a very large number of countries where understanding of climate change is low, both within governments and among citizens. We come across intelligent people in these countries all the time who still think that climate change is something to do with the ozone hole. These countries are mostly in the poor and middle-income world, though we would also include Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan in that group, places with very well-educated populations. This group could be especially interesting because they're more open to learning about what's happening. Many of the citizens of these countries are used to thinking long-term and working with others for the good of all. As well as nations, there are institutions which could supply people to work on the transition or act as catalysts for change. Some institutions understand the situation very well and can play a positive role in the transition. These include the Catholic Church, as well as some other religions, the United Nations, and many military organizations around the world. The German and US military are particularly well informed about climate science because they see, rightly, that it presents a major threat to social stability and raises the risk of armed conflict as people fight over land and water. They know too that one of the big short-term consequences of climate change will be a big rise in migration, driven by higher temperatures and more prolonged droughts. They understand too that any meaningful response to climate change is closely tied to the fate of the fossil fuel industry. There are also institutions that are mostly blinkered to the climate problem because, for years, their work has depended on spreading neoliberal ideas. This group includes the World Bank, the World Economic Forum, the IMF, and the European Central Bank, institutions which have promoted economic growth and free trade. This is not to discredit individuals within these institutions who have dedicated their working lives to creating positive change, or who try to create change from within. There are many who, also in retirement, continue to question and refine their personal choices and try to apply their experience in positive ways. But the backbone of these institutions has been free market economics and the promotion of economic growth. Some of these institutions have belatedly tried to change their message, even producing reports which call for change. Yet their intellectual challenges remain hard to resolve, because for decades they've enthusiastically promoted the system that's the cause of the crisis today. We would also include parts of the media in this group, which includes magazines like The Economist and newspapers like The Financial Times and The Wall Street Journal. They too have almost unquestioningly promoted a system of human development which creates ecological destruction and widens inequality. Another institutional group that's likely to be less helpful than it might initially appear is the NGO sector, especially some of those organisations devoted to green causes. While these institutions are often populated by nice, well-meaning people, there are only a small number that fully understand the enormity of the climate problem, certainly in our experience. The people working in these institutions care, and often very deeply. But those that focus on only one part of the problem, such as species loss, water pollution, or social injustice, don't always see the whole. Some NGOs have even become part of the establishment, and so they shy away from challenging the system. This is partly because of the way they're funded, though some have also been seduced by neoliberal thinking. They've been persuaded that the free market and the finance sector can solve the world's environmental crisis, blinding themselves to the unfortunate reality that they are its cause. Within these myriad groups and nations, there are people who can help manage the process of change. The trick is to find them. So this needs to be one of the other early tasks for changemakers. Identify champions, communicate with them, and build networks around those who really get it. Finally, in this section, and just for the record, we're asked, surprisingly frequently, if humanity should simply move to another planet. So let's be clear, that's not possible. Even if humanity was able to launch a spaceship that could carry thousands of people for many successive generations, it would take thousands of years to reach what astronomers think is the next potentially inhabitable solar system using the best currently available technology. Even then, because scientists don't know how to stop a spaceship travelling at nearly 650,000 kilometres an hour in a vacuum, it would simply sail past its intended destination.